Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 47. This is Jamie Russo. Thanks for listening. Today, we're going to go through a sample coworking P&L. If you'd like a sample P&L, text the phrase P&L sheet. That's P-A-N-D-L sheet, all one word, to 44222, and we will deliver that to your inbox. And before we get started with the P&L review, I want to share with you a little bit about SpareDesk. As more and more freelancers and professionals become untethered to a corporate campus, they are embracing their mobility and the ability to work from anywhere around the world. SpareDesk launched earlier this year and is becoming the platform for freelancers and digital nomads to find great places to work wherever they want to work. SpareDesk has thousands of active users who browse and book desks in over 35 cities every day. If you want your space to show up in those search results, list your space at sparedesk.co/spaces. So this episode is also brought to you by the Global Workspace Association, and we have just launched our 2017 industry survey for operators and members of shared workspaces. Staples has generously donated two Microsoft Surface Pro laptops, which are the cool ones with the screens that flip around, and each participant has the option to enter to win. But more importantly, do this because we all want to make the right decisions as we manage into coworking 3.0. This survey is designed to deliver detailed insights into the most profitable layout for shared workspaces, data by market on meeting room revenue, community manager salaries, and more. We need data from each and every one of you to draw the most reliable conclusions. No one wants to make decisions on small sample sizes. So the data will come right back to you in the form of detailed reports. Please go to globalworkspace.org/survey to fill yours out today. So today is another Just Me episode, but coming up, we have three action-packed interviews with Chris Elliott, who's going to demystify corporate co-working, Iris Kavanaugh, who's going to talk about recruiting, retention, and culture, and Mara Hauser, who's going to talk about suburban co-working. So stay tuned. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, hit the subscribe button. And if you're a listener and you have not yet left a review, please pop into iTunes and leave a review. It makes a huge difference in helping the podcast show up in search results when people search for a podcast to listen to. Okay, so let's dive into the P&L review. We've had a lot of requests to understand co-working P&Ls, so I'm just going to go through kind of high-level sources of income, standard expenses, and kind of what that looks like, and we're going to have a sample P&L available. If you want that sample, you can send a text to 44222 and type in P&L sheet. So the letter P, the word and, L, sheet, all one word, P and L sheet. So spell that out and we will send you a sample P&L. You can also go to the show notes at everythingcoworking.com/47 and there will be a download link there as well. Okay, so let's dive in. So just a quick note, this P&L would generally apply to most shared workspaces. The difference is really going to be, you know, in the income lines and where your income is weighted, either to private offices or open space. So we get a lot of questions about using the term co-working when there are lots of different flavors of shared office space. And the deal is that Google uses the word co-working. So that's what we use. It's just a standard kind of mass media term. And that's when people are searching, Google recognizes co-working faster than it does like flexible office space or office business center or executive suites or that kind of thing. But the P&L is going to be pretty relevant to any type of shared workspace. Again, you just will have to go in and kind of customize based on how you're going to weight your layout. And the layout certainly it drives the P&L and what that looks like. So make sure you're making decisions about your layout based on how you want your P&L to look. So I think this will be helpful. So sources of revenue generally are going to be workspace, meeting space, and virtual mail. So let's talk about the workspace. My recommendation, if you're going to build a P&L, is to be as detailed as possible to start with. And if you open your space, ask your bookkeeper to be detailed and provide reports in a detailed manner so that they can also break out your different type of memberships. Because this is going to be the only way that you can look at the data and really know what's working best, what's selling fastest, what's most in demand. So be as detailed as you can. I remember when I first started, I kind of made the mistake. My bookkeeper just lumped everything into basically revenue, and I had no idea. I think maybe we broke out private office and then just lumped everything else together. And if you're testing different types of memberships, you want that data. So a couple of examples would be, more granular breakdowns in your open plan. So likely you'll have some private offices. So that should be a line item. And the sample P&L has that in there. And just kind of a note on private offices. Overall, in co-working, we're seeing a trend of more private offices. And that is simply because most markets have more demand for private space. This doesn't necessarily mean, one-person offices. It could be team suites. And supermarket dependent. So I have a space in Palo Alto. And we list on Liquid Space. And one feature I love about Liquid Space is that they're a platform to connect flexible workspace users and flexible workspace providers. So you can list your space on their platform. You can go in and they will basically alert you to who's looking for what type of space in your market. So we see in the Palo Alto market, which is south of San Francisco, lots of demand for team suites, probably because it's more of a startup culture, Silicon Valley, and we don't have those available. So we have some, but not as many as the market's demanding. So if you can get any of that kind of data before you open your space about your market, it's really helpful to understand kind of where that demand is. So offices, team suites, and then other types of offerings such as dedicated desks. So dedicated desks would be fixed desks, typically with some storage and the ability to leave your belongings there overnight or through the duration of your membership. And those can be very popular for anybody with a monitor and who likes to have stuff and who, takes notes or, whatever it is, just really looks at the co-working space as the alternative to working at home or Starbucks. Like, it's their routine. They're going to go there every day. They probably are not spending much time on the phone, so they don't need private space. But they want a place where they can go pretty often, almost every day. And so they want the ability to leave their stuff. Again, the demand for that product can vary by market. We've always seen it be very popular, both in Chicago and Palo Alto. We almost never have dedicated desks open. And then co-working seats. We just did a survey in November asking for, we surveyed 300 shared workspaces. We had 80 responses in the U.S. And this was a phone survey. So just kind of a mini survey to the bigger one the GWA is running right now. But asked for most popular memberships. And it was fascinating, how many varieties of kind of open space memberships folks have. But examples could be, 5 days a month, 10 days a month, full time, nights and weekends. And again, you want to be as detailed as possible with your reporting so that you know which ones are most popular. If you are not the one directly running the space, you may not see, be able to gauge from tours and that kind of thing. You want a dashboard that you can look at and really gauge and determine, where you should be putting your focus and your marketing. And then meeting room space is another one. And we should do another episode on this, but there is data out there that suggests that spaces with, 5+ meeting rooms tend to generate more meeting room revenue than ones with fewer than 5, and that a variety of sizes also helps drive demand. The idea being that as users use your space and see the options available, they always think of you as a solution because you know they know that they that you have options no matter what size of meeting they have or what style, whether it's an, more of an informal one-on-one meeting or a boardroom meeting. So think about that when you're thinking about meeting room revenue. And there are a number of ways and places to list your space to generate external meeting room revenue in addition to meeting room revenue from your members. Again, Liquid Space is one, Cloud VO is one, DaVinci Virtual is one, and there are a number of other platforms as well. So that will be a line item. That line item can vary greatly depending on kind of where you're located, what are the other options in the area, how is your parking. Parking is going to be really important for meeting room revenue because these are folks that are going to come in and out. You can be, you know, sort of, and also if you're whether you're in a downtown or sort of on the outskirts. So basically ease of access is going to really drive, and parking, it will drive your meeting room revenue. So keep that in mind. And then virtual mail is another one. So this is much more typical in an office business center than in a co-working space. And I think that's unfortunate because there are office business centers who are paying their rent with virtual mail. So this, again, like the meeting room, can be very dependent on your address. So, you know, really attractive urban center addresses that are on, you know, Park Avenue or Michigan Avenue in Chicago, you know, that have kind of well-known recognized addresses can be real home runs. But even lesser known addresses, you know, there's becoming a real trend to people not wanting their home addresses to be used. And if you have a business license, often you'll be required to have an address that is not at your home, even if you operate out of your home. So that's just becoming more and more popular, and people are looking for solutions to that, or package receipt if folks don't live in a building where you know, they have some central receipt of packages. Some folks will get virtual offices just to be able to do that, not even for business purposes. And virtual mail, call it virtual mail / virtual office. It kind of depends on what you include in it. It can be mail, just mail receipt, or it can include conference room time. It can include a number of co-working days each month. So you can create sort of a light package for a member who may be focused more on mail, but would use it for other reasons. So this can take time to build, but if you are consistent, you can have a lot of success with this. And there are vendors out there that can help bring you leads. Those include Cloud VO, DaVinci, Anytime Mailbox, Sphere Mail, US Zoom. So check those out. And we have a blog post that I'll include. The GWA has a blog post that I'll include in the show notes with a long list of service providers that are in the industry. So I'll put that in there because I know I'm mentioning a lot of names. And if you happen to be in a car or walking the dogs, you're not writing those down. Okay, so revenue, virtual mail, meeting room, and then different types of workspace. So let's talk about the expense side. So I've had conversations with a number of people trying to understand which expenses are fixed and variable and how they look based on how much space you have and whether or not you have multiple spaces. So a couple of points, a lot of these, your bigger expenses are fixed. So if you have a bigger space, then your cost per square foot is going to go down, which can be good. So we hear a lot of folks, you know, I think when you first take out a commercial lease, very nervous about taking very much space because this is a sort of a new, you know, a new journey and can be really nerve-wracking to tie yourself to a commercial lease, which is exactly why co-working exists, right? But for many of us who operate spaces, we have to sign traditional leases. But the reality is that bigger spaces, you know, amortize those fixed costs much more easily and therefore can be more profitable. And I mentioned the GWA's industry survey at the beginning of the podcast. And this year's goal is to really help understand some of those drivers so that people can make decisions about what size of space they're opening and really look at kind of what the, you know, revenue and profit per square foot tend to be across the industry. So stay tuned for that. And if you're an operator, please fill it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. So expenses, so your big ones are going to be rent, which is variable. It's going to be a per square foot cost staff, which is going to be fixed and then somewhat variable. So generally, we would say you could have one staff probably to about 8,000 square feet, at which point you probably have enough people in and out of the space that you need at least another half-time person to help manage that volume of requests and sort of staying involved in the community and all the operational things that need to go on. So if you're running up to about 8,000 square feet, and again, it's going to depend where you are and how much volume you have on an average day, one staff person. And after that, you have to start going up in increments of a half a staff person. And then bigger expenses like, well, so sorry, real quick on the staff piece. Also think about the staff piece. So community manager roles, salaries, I mean, this is really rough and it really varies by market, but probably $35,000 in a bigger market could go up to $60,000 with bigger responsibilities. The $60,000 probably comes with P&L responsibility. So that's much, much more of a GM type of role. Again, the GWA survey is asking that question about sort of front of the house salaries to help people understand what those ranges look like. But that cost is fixed. So if you are running a 2,000 square foot space and you want to hire somebody to run it, you're not going to do it yourself. You know, that cost is only going across 2,000 square feet and across the revenue that that 2,000 square feet can bring in, right? So if you have an 8,000 square foot space, then that $40,000, say, cost is divided by 8,000 square feet instead of 2,000 square feet. So you're just going to be better off in terms of profit per square foot. So something to think about when you're thinking about the size of your space. If you are the person running it, then that's much less of a concern. But if you're trying to pay yourself, then that's still the same concern. And then internet is another big one. Same thing, same internet for 2,000 square feet versus 30,000 square feet. You're going to need other equipment, additional equipment, like many more access points for 35,000 square feet than 2,000 square feet. But if you're buying a fiber connection or some other dedicated line, that's going to be one fixed fee. And that's going to be the big piece of it. Once you buy your access points, they don't cost you money on a monthly basis. So those three are biggies. Let's run through some of the other line items here. Marketing. So print, website, online, offline. So those can be both fixed and variable, right? You're going to have some advantage to having multiple locations with one website. So website, I feel like we're always updating websites, trying to keep up on SEO and do all of these things. That certainly has some economies of scale when it's centralized and you have multiple locations. There's still expenses like Yelp listings and other sort of local advertising that if you're not in the same market, you're paying for that all separately. So some of it is sort of an economy of scale and sometimes some of it is not necessarily. Computer, telephone, internet, which we already talked about. Credit card processing fees, which are typically a percent of revenue, you know, probably 2.5, but can be a big line item. So don't forget to include that. Janitorial, that can add up very quickly. The bigger the space you have and the more people you have in and out, you probably need to have that done every day. Trash bins emptied, kitchens cleaned, all that good stuff. The space will get messy very quickly if you don't get that done. And that can be, you know, that can be a big line item every month. So you want to get a quote from a local provider as you're working on your P&L to see how much that will cost. Independent contractors, even if you have a full-time staff person, that person will get sick, that person will need vacation time, you might have an event, you know, reasons why you will need additional staff person. So make sure you budget for that, because if you don't, you won't. So you want to put that in the P&L as an expense. Insurance, I should do a separate episode on insurance, or at least a reference. Insurance can be tricky to get for shared workspaces, and I have a couple of providers who I should put on that, actually, talking to myself here, on the provider list that I mentioned earlier. I'm going to add them because there are providers who understand the business that we're in, and then there are those that don't. And you want one that does so that it comes out to be affordable for you. Accounting fees, you're going to need a bookkeeper and a CPA. You're going to need to get your books done every month. You will think that you might do this, but you will not do this. And then it will weigh on you like a heavy ton of bricks. So just hire a bookkeeper to keep you up to date every month. Office expenses. This is a big bucket. Coffee, toilet paper, paper towels, silverware, because your forks will disappear all the time. What else? Printer paper. Anything sort of that stocks the kitchen or the printer station, things like that. And of course, coffee. And I'll set the P&L, well, it doesn't have a ton of detail on what's in there, but you have to kind of estimate. Coffee's a big line item. Don't underestimate that one. If you're providing it and you have a lot of people in and out, you will have a lot of coffee drinkers. And you will want to offer good coffee. So that will be a big line item that you want to make sure to budget appropriately for. Utilities that may or may not be included in your lease, make sure you're, especially before you sign a lease, that it's very clear to you whether you pay for that or it's included in your lease. If it's a full service lease and it would be included and you don't have a separate line item for that, but if it's like a triple net lease, then you pay for the utilities and you want to get a sense for what those are throughout the year. And if you have a lovely open brick and timber space with 18-foot ceilings, like I had in Chicago, it will cost you a lot of money to heat and cool that space, even though it's beautiful. So make sure you plan for that. And then repairs and maintenance. So this is your space. This is your business. You have to keep it maintained. Plan for that because you won't want to make those repairs if you don't have a budget for it every month. And you want to keep the space looking really nice. The people who pay you to use your space have expectations about the professionalism of the space. They may be corporate members who are used to, you know, a top-notch corporate space. So make sure you have that set aside and find yourself a really good local handyman, which can be challenging. Make friends with them, bake them cookies, make it so that they come over when you desperately need something, because at some point you will be desperate for some sort of repair. Make sure you have an IT service that also budget for that. Budget for IT help. Things will go wrong. You will have find dead spots. You will have a router that doesn't work right. Generally, you can get a good setup that will mostly be set it and forget it, but you will need some help and you will want to have a budget for that because you won't want that to be a question when those things come up. So those are kind of the big buckets. I mean, there are other things that people do in P&Ls, like if you have a partnership, then you may have, sort of a professional fee that you're paying partners to kind of run part of the business that comes out of a P&L. If you're operating a space for someone, you may have licensing fees or brand fees, things like that, that are in a P&L. So there are certainly variations there, but this is kind of a basic one to think about. So, you may have other things like furniture leases that I didn't mention. If you're not paying for the furniture up front, that may be a line item that comes out. If you have a loan, then you may have debt repayments that are on your P&L every month. So all considerations, make sure you have those included. So again, this is kind of just a basic overview. And if you want a sample or have any questions, never hesitate to email. I love hearing from people who listen to the podcast. We actually just had our kickoff call for the first flight group that we're running, and I got to meet a bunch of folks who listen to the podcast, and that was really rewarding and exciting. So email at jamie@everythingcoworking.com. And if you want the sample P&L sheet, you can email me there or 44222 and text the phrase P&L sheet to that number. Again, that's 44222 and text the phrase P&L sheet, and is spelled out and it's all one word. Thanks for listening today. Again, it's not just me next time. We have 3 episodes all recorded and ready to roll with some great interviews and some great insights that I look forward to sharing with you. So I'll talk to you next week for episode number 48.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.